Moncrief on News Talk.
The general view is that procrastination is a bad thing. It's the enemy of getting stuff done. But is it? I don't know. I can't make up my mind. Luckily, we're joined by the author and historian Peter Jones. Peter is the author of Self-Help from the Middle Ages. Peter, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. It's wonderful to be here.
Tell us how the seven deadly sins have what they've got to do with this.
Well, okay, the seven deadly sins were a kind of periodic table of the mind in the Middle Ages. They weren't necessarily this list of things not to do. They were a kind of map for working out your personality and for sort of working out what your quirks are really about. Pride, envy, anger, gluttony, avarice, and lust, we can talk about another time, but it's sloth, really, that is where procrastination comes in. Sloth is not laziness. It's really when your heart stops firing and when you feel kind of everything you do is a little bit hollow. You feel listless and restless and nothing has any meaning anymore. And in that state, sometimes I guess we tend to procrastinate, or maybe we can compare this to procrastination.
Okay, so in the original meaning then, sloth wasn't regarded as a failing, just a thing that happens to people sometimes.
Something that happens to all of us. Yeah, just like all the deadly sins, they're things that happen to you no matter how good you are, no matter how good your life is. You know, these things come like a sort of cold virus. You know, you can't avoid them.
Yeah. So by that, were they referring to a period of time, weeks or months or even years, where someone just doesn't love the things they used to love anymore? Or is it more, there's a couple of hours where you just couldn't be arsed or can't face doing whatever task is that you don't really like that much?
I feel like sloth can be both of those things, you know, and if it is a number of years, then this is a serious, you know, you're really seriously in the deadly sin there. But I think there's this understanding nature of this system that we have them, you know, kind of on a daily basis. So we might experience a little bit of distraction, a little bit of restlessness, a little bit of inertia in any given day. And the idea is to forgive ourselves for that and say, well, you know, it's not that bad. You know, it's just what being a human is all about.
Yeah. So it's not that bad, or is it of any use to us?
Well, yes, it can be. So there are kind of three approaches to procrastination that I've discovered in medieval texts. And there is one that is pretty bad. And this comes up in Dante. And this is when you spiral thoughtlessly. There's something that comes to you, like for Dante, it was someone singing a song and it's beautiful and he's distracted from what he should be doing. And he goes into a kind of trance. And the point that he makes is that when you just follow attractive things thoughtlessly, you kind of, you can spiral, and suddenly the stuff that's being thrown at you doesn't really have any, it's kind of hollow, and you can't tell the difference anymore because you're just kind of following this distracting stuff. That's definitely bad.
Yeah.
And most, we'd all agree with that. But there are these other kind of beautiful forms of procrastination. At the heart of so many great medieval poems, there's a procrastinating figure who's really our hero. So Parzival, for example, written in the 1200s, is a story of a guy who wants to be the greatest knight, but he can't really work out how to do this. And he kind of wanders restlessly around. And precisely because he's wandering restlessly, he actually stumbles on the Holy Grail. And the real adventure begins. Likewise, The Pearl, it's one of my favorite poems, The Pearl, late 1300s. The narrator is wandering again restlessly. He's in a garden. He's distracted. He's looking at the flowers. He should be doing something else, getting on with his life. But in that kind of wandering, in the flowers, he has this dream vision of paradise. You know, that garden was in fact a portal to paradise. So there's this idea that medieval writers have, and I think they put it so beautifully, that often the beautiful thing, the important thing, comes to you when you're not looking for it. And procrastination, therefore, can be a kind of doorway to discovery.
Yeah. So it doesn't sound exactly like procrastination, though, as in you mean to do something, but you can't do it, but more kind of you're just letting your mind wander.
Well, yeah, I suppose procrastination is when you're putting off something you think you should be doing, right? So we're procrastinating when we're not working. Like, you know, I click on this article. And I think in that sense, it is procrastination. You know, these heroes are procrastinating. They've got this task and they just can't do it. You might think of Prince Hamlet, you know, a bit later than the Middle Ages, but it's similar. You know, he's got something he should be doing, but he just can't face it. So I think it is procrastination. The point is, maybe sometimes when we call it procrastination, you know, it's kind of demonizing it. We're making it seem like it's just something pretty evil or wrong. You know, oh, I'm procrastinating again. I know I should be doing this thing. But in fact, no, maybe it's just the mind wandering into interesting and fruitful places.
Yeah. Though if you've got a deadline, that might be much use to you if you go, well, I've just discovered these 10 interesting things, but you haven't done your work for your boss kind of thing.
Oh, that's true. But maybe, you know, those things you're discovering when, you know, when the deadline's getting closer and closer, they're the things that make the next deadline. You know what I mean? You know, it's like sometimes even when we're crushed and pushed towards a deadline, we discover something really great that really leads us to some interesting place. But yeah, you're right. Okay, sometimes there are exceptions when we really just need to do the work.
Yeah. I suppose, is there a difference? I remember reading about Picasso, that often Picasso might be working on something, particularly if it's on a canvas, and he'd go, I don't know where I'm going to go with this. And then he'd deliberately take it down and make it face the wall so we didn't have to look at it. And then he'd go and do something else. His assumption was wherever he was going would become apparent to him at some later stage, which I suppose is kind of almost like deliberate procrastination.
Well, I think it's like what that sounds like with Picasso is he's resistant to this kind of efficient work method. Like when something becomes too structured and too planned, don't you just kind of sometimes get a bit sick of it? And it's like, I'm a prisoner of this structure that I've made for myself. And like maybe with Picasso, that was what was going on. Like maybe I need a fresh approach. Maybe I need to walk away, just let this thing be a bit looser, a bit freer.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, those are the moments where I think it can really come in handy.
In an age though that we live in where we have endless choice, does that promote procrastination? We can't make up our minds about anything.
Well, I think, there's so much content out there. And I think that's why what I would say is like the medieval writers wrote really well about vigilance. You know what I mean? It's like, so Bernard of Clairvaux, who I think is the greatest monk who ever was, and one of the great European writers that no one reads. Bernard of Clairvaux, 12th century writer, he writes that, there's so much out there, but life isn't a sprint. Like living a good life is not a sprint, right? It's a marathon, ultra marathon over rough terrain. There can be times when you fall off, when you struggle, and that's just normal, right? And there's so much content out there. Of course, we're going to get hooked and lured into it. And I think the point he makes is that we need to be awake when that happens. And I just sort of evaluate it more critically. Like, is this interesting? Is this actually interesting? Does this engage me? Is it worth my time? And then, although it's still you're distracting yourself from what you should be doing, you're kind of following your natural inclination, your interest. And, that can be a wonderful thing. And there's so much content out there, it's hard not to. But I think the difference is when you're just kind of being hypnotized by that content. And that content is allowing you to switch off that brain and not be awake, if you know what I mean. So I think that's the kind of thing. Yes, there is so much content. How can we help it? We are fish and there are so many fishing rods trying to lure us in. Our mouths are sort of gaping open for these things. But if we wake up a bit and engage, there's beauty in at the end of all those hooks. Does that metaphor work?
Does boredom play a part in this? And there's a lot of talk now about kids say, kids should be allowed to be bored because it fosters creativity.
Oh, it does. I mean, boredom is part of the deadly sin of sloth for medieval writers. And I think the thing about boredom is, this guy called William Peraldus writes really beautifully about this in the 1200s again. And, he says, like, sometimes, you've become cold. You're bored because everything leaves you cold, right? But this is better than being what he calls lukewarm, which is when you're complacent. You're just going through the motions, And are you bored? Are you engaged? You don't know. You're just going through the motions. But when you're bored, you're kind of tuning out for a second and you're saying, I'm not into any of this. And, that isn't such a bad thing. At least, again, because what are we doing in that moment? If I recognize that I'm bored, I know that I need a new approach or that something's wrong, that my heart isn't in this. And I think that there's something beautiful about that. Allow yourself to be bored because it can be a wake-up call.
Mm, it can be a wake-up call to everything you're doing is being a waste of your time.
That is true. That is true. I know.
A lot of your professional life has been pointless, which I assume might kind of give rise to, you might do something about it, but it might give rise to a profound existential crisis. But I suppose you're learning something from that.
I know, but I suppose the point is to be subtle in those moments and not say, I'm bored, therefore this was all pointless, therefore I've wasted my time. It's more like, okay, I'm bored right now. Maybe my approach right now is the problem rather than my whole life writ large, you know what I mean? So I think, being really finely aware of our boredom and nuanced about it and sort of like alert to the fact that we're not always bored, but we're bored now. And what does that tell us?
Yeah. And just going back to the seven deadly sins, this is more like, I know you've written a book, self-help, with the title Self-Help in it from the Middle Ages. So the idea of the seven deadly sins, was that almost like a portrait of a person's psychology and were they lesser or more in various areas?
Yeah, so how it worked was you had confession in the Middle Ages. So from 1215, every single person, every adult had to make confession once a year of all their sins and where their head was, I suppose, if you like, for that year. And this was a kind of therapy, really. It functioned as a kind of therapy. You sit down with the priest and you talk through, you know, your inner feelings, your temptations, your negativities, whatever they might be. So it does function like a kind of therapy session. And the seven deadly sins were the tool for working through that. These priests, they're busy. They need to do a lot of these confessions all of a sudden, these therapy sessions. And the seven deadly sins becomes a sort of structuring unit. Okay, let's talk about your pride, which is really a way to talk about your ego and your, you know, how you feel about others, your envy, you know, your sort of hatred and your gossip and so on. So it was a tool for kind of working through your psyche. But at the heart of them all, they're all quite surprising. I think we know the names, pride and envy and anger and all the rest of them. But a lot of the way they're actually talked about is kind of surprising. They're not a stick to beat people with. You know, it's all about, at their best, they're all about moderation and learning to sort of recognize yourself.
Yeah, and that those elements are within all of us, which Absolutely. Is a nice equalizing idea. Peter, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was Peter Jones. He's the author of Self-Help from the Middle Ages. A few comments on that. I can relate to what you said about Picasso, especially in music. If writing or even learning something, I sometimes have to go and do something else. I come back to it and then it flows. It's often the next day. Yeah. The worst thing about college was procrastinating when you should be studying, says this texter. Doing anything but picking up the book you should be reading and then trying to cram when you've run out of time. Yes. And because I forget who it's from. I read a quote. Somebody said that there's writers, contrary to the, I suppose, the stereotype, tend to have very clean houses because they, rather than sit down and write, they'll get up and do the dishes and give the place a good mop. I heard before that a little procrastination is beneficial. For example, a project done immediately is finished, but if left to percolate a little more, more developed ideas can form and produce a better project. I unfortunately work within seconds of a deadline. That's pushing the procrastination limit. Living on your nerves there. People who never procrastinate must be so stressed, says this texter. We all need downtime. Yeah, but then again, if you're procrastinating and you're on a deadline, then might that produce even more stress? I am very productive about stuff I feel passionate about, but like us all, I procrastinate about the boring stuff, filling expenses, paperwork, cleaning, work stuff, decluttering. Yet I'm completely on top of booking our summer holidays. Good for you. It's good to know what your strengths are. And that's an excellent strength to have. And finally, somebody else says, this is an interesting point. Is TV procrastination a thing? When we finally sit down in the evening, we spend more time deciding what to watch, scrolling through different streaming services, never really happily landing on anything. It gets too late and we just end up watching a US Office repeat. Again, I suppose that goes back to what we were talking to Peter about, the amount of choice we have. If we had far less choice, we wouldn't feel like we were missing something.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.